Hello, my name's Sylvester McCoy, Doctor Who number 7. You are listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. Yes, that's what. There's something wrong with the speaker. Hello.
Hi.
This is Gallifrey Public Radio, dedicated to positive enjoyment of Doctor Who. We travel through classic and new episodes, explore the extended universe, and play a few games from time to time. We do discuss news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but we'll warn you before anything considered spoilers comes up.
Welcome to episode 516 of Gallifrey Public Radio. I'm Jay.
I'm Julie.
And I'm Kier. This week, we're looking to the May start of Series 1 of New Who, and wondering about the rising number of stories that are already involving elements of fantasy and superstition. So joining us for the chat is a friend whom you've heard a few times on GPR, and who we believe can speak to these themes with some authority. It's Drew Meyer from the Who & Company podcast. Welcome back, Drew.
I have a rich fantasy life.
I try to live just outside the bounds of reality at every opportunity.
Yes. Hi.
Well, hello.
Welcome. We're excited to have you here.
Thank you. It's been a while.
It has.
It's been a minute.
Or two.
Well, we figured the timeliness for this conversation was absolutely key because of the series trailer that had just dropped a few days prior to our recording, and happens to really flat out call out exactly what we were hoping to discuss. So, serendipitous.
Yeah, things seem to be just getting more and more magical, they say. So, which, you know, they could be describing what's happening in the show, but also it kind of feels like a description of the fandom.
That is true.
And our response to the show itself.
Yeah, I want to see where those things overlap with intent shortly. But Jay, can you sort of walk us through where you had, because you sort of saw this train coming back during the specials.
Yeah, I mean, if you remember back in Wild Blue Yonder, the doctor making the whole salt line thing, saying specifically, you can't cross salt. It's, you know, in our universe, it said the vampires, demons, ghosts cannot cross a line of salt until they've counted every single grain. You've got no choice. And the not things kind of arguing with them, being like, that's just superstition. And, but then later on, you had the doctor being like, yeah, no, I really shouldn't have done that. The lines are thin there. The veil's thin at the edge. And who knows what kind of thing I kicked off there. And ever since then, we've had these, you know, the toy maker showing up. We had goblins who feed on coincidence and things like that. And then leading into the season one trailer, where you specifically have Kate Stewart saying that things seem to be turning more and more supernatural. So it's not hard to kind of trace that line.
I had wondered about this prior to Kate's delivered line. Thank you very much, Gemma Redgrave, for giving us that fantastic segue into what we wanted to discuss. But yeah, it just, from the moment, I think it was in the giggle that you sort of saw the toy maker referencing exactly how he found his way into this reality. And it was connected to that stumble or that potential misstep that the doctor made with the salt at the edge of the universe. So I don't really know whether this is a long time coming or whether this has been danced. You know, we've sort of, not to pun the line of salt, but we've sort of towed the line of the fantastical and the supernatural before, but we've always sort of, well, at least in most memories I can think of, we've justified it using either hard science or pseudoscience or completely wonky science, but we found a way to be able to work it into a sci-fi program before.
Oh, you mean that vampires are actually alien fish people?
Mm-hmm. Or that ghosts...
Exactly.
Or that ghosts are alien gas people.
Yeah, or it's in some instances...
Or just light shows.
Yeah, or they could be just ghosts that are time astronauts stuck moving backwards through time.
Yes, taking the long way around. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Doctor Who minus, say, psychic phenomenon has always had I wouldn't say reasonable, necessarily rational explanation for all of that, which has worked really well to when folks are describing it as a science fiction show, which is never how I have described it. for me, it's always been a science fantasy show, and it has these kind of bursts and peaks where, for instance, your sonic screwdriver may as well just be a magic wand. Well, the Doctor has been described as Merlin on more than one occasion. Mm-hmm. I think, what is it, River says, I always... not curious about, but hesitant around wizards because it always turns out to be him. Something along those lines, right?
I have always found it kind of entertaining, the idea of taking the town that's always been terrified of the monster in the woods that turned out to be something completely explicable. It just happened to be an alien species. I mean, it's no big. We have them all the time, right?
Right.
So, but that's this... doesn't always have the same ready at hand explanation just to say, well, they're goblins, they're time riders. They happen to, they fuel themselves on coincidence and they're drawn to you and your bad luck. And they just keep putting those terms out there and not really pursuing it any further to try and find out, well, exactly how does that wash? How do they get worked into our fantasy stories for centuries that we've always had these ideas of these little goblins. Now you're telling me they're real. Oh, but you're not going to take it any further. There's this giant one that we just stabbed with a church spire and we're still not going to talk about what these things are.
Well, I think that's the whole point, is that we're about to do that more and how it relates to the show. And I don't think you can take just what we've seen so far and say, well, they didn't give me enough. Because mm-hmm. it's just been introduced. If you, I don't know if it's jumping the shark or what have you, but it's that if they already take it to the next level or tell us why or what's going on, they're flipping the page before we're ready to be there, is mm-hmm. my take on it. I think that we're going to get more out of our new series, especially now that we've seen the trailer, with some more hints of carrying some of these through lines and making it more involved than maybe we've seen in previous iterations throughout the 60 years that we've had. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited to see how this can bridge a little bit of some of those other fantasy tropes that we all love and hold dear. I think we always look for what's the science behind it, but maybe it's okay that we're not going to get that.
Well, and that's the thing. Like there's always been that pointed effort to every time we have a ghost story being like, what kind of technobabble can we throw at it so that it's not actually ghosts, with notably few exceptions where it's just kind of like a question mark. But it seems like there's always been that very concerted effort to make sure there is some kind of explanation. And with the goblins, we really didn't get that. And with the way this trailer looks, it seems like I could see them going like, well, yeah, let's try this out for a little bit and see what happens. And then if people are uncomfortable, we can go back to offering the explanations. But let's try honest to goodness ghost stories or something.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I think it'll be a very pleasant change of pace. But I do want to walk back just for a moment, because Kier, when you were talking about the description of the goblins, you specifically said that they were attracted to Ruby's bad luck, which means that Ruby's bad luck is something that can be measured. It's something that it happens so often that it's actually measurable, which means we're talking about a quantitative aspect of superstition. Mm-hmm. So she is a bad luck generator, which is interesting. Is this going to be a character thing? Because we have a lot of ways of describing our companions or our assistants or our friends or our fam or however you're describing it. But have we ever had an unlucky one? Like, that's a really kind of clever place to put them. And by its very nature, ups the stakes for peril, because an unlucky companion traveling with the Doctor, especially one who might be able to if the luck, let's call it a luck field, for instance, is just centered on her, but actually can spread into something like the TARDIS or to the Doctor or to adventures, how cool would that be to have the companion be the one generating the kind of impetus for each adventure? Right. So, yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah.
I think with that, you get a little bit of an interest making Ruby be maybe more important or central to the story as well. And this Doctor, for sure, show stealer, right? We're never going to question that. the gravitas that he has, what his presence on screen and anywhere he goes, pretty much. So playing with that as someone who, like, how do you pose someone next to that? You make them have something that makes them even more important or dangerous, or pay attention to them, even though they're trying to not call attention to themselves. And I think Ruby's going to be able to carry that through.
I would like to respond with 2 points with that. The first is that the rumor is that the Millie Gibson is only going to be around for this one season. So it'll be a looped story arc, right? Mm-hmm. Like something, it seems like if you're only going to stick around for one season and you are as good a writer as RTD is, then you are going to have to make them the focus of it. And that's one of the things that the modern series, the revival series, and even what we're calling our, I guess, new series excels at, is making the companion sort of the focal point of the storylines. So there's no reason to think that that's not going to continue. And the second point I have completely forgotten. So when it comes back to me, I will mention it.
I had a sort of a standing theory. I think we started to hash this out. Jay, you and I were sort of riffing on this a couple of weeks ago about the fact that because we don't know Ruby's origins, there's the possibility that she was sort of a plant of sorts, not necessarily a nefarious one, but her presence, you know, her being established, her being dropped off or abandoned, however you want to refer to it, at the church at that point on time, that set all these coincidences in motion, that drew the attention, that, you know, kicked this whole ball rolling, is the fulcrum on which this whole tipped universe is leaning, right? So that as things get progressively worse, she is, through no fault of her own, part of the catalyst that's kicked this all off. So this idea of things continuing to go wrong around her is because of the fact that she is the anomaly, and that you could see things devolve, and, you know, reality as we understand it, this sci-fi reality of ours of 63 years, as we recognize it, gets progressively worse because of the fact that there is this misfit in the mixture. And I think somewhere in the trailer, Millie's line in a voiceover says, "You know, I figured out what I'm meant to do. I'm meant to save the world." So maybe she has to come to some realization at the close of the season that she has to either go back to from where she came or resolve her existence or whatever to set things right.
Yeah, like a closed loop. Yeah. Your mentioning of nefarious is brought to mind what I was going to say, which is if you play a different soundtrack on the trailer, it is ominous as all get out. The Doctor comes across as very charismatic, but also completely predatory. Everything that he says, it feels incredibly ominous. But, you know, we know better.
It also seems like there were a few scenes where he's looking for her or is missing her. So where has she gone? I'm wondering if there's going to be a thread of that, just having her pop out of existence and then have to go find her, come bring her back, just like with the goblins, which, again, gives you a juxtaposition with the Doctor having to go find and search and, again, focus on somebody else and make it less about the Doctor and more about solving those mysteries, which it's been a minute since we've seen that focus.
Which does teeter precariously close to an Impossible Girl thing with Clara, where right. We have a character like Missy who sets in motion Clara falling into the Doctor's path so that she can do something later on, which, you know, doesn't turn out to be the focus, but there's an entire season where Clara is the mystery to be solved, and that works for some people and does not work for others. So, but I mean, again, we are talking about very skilled writers for a show that is doing a lot of things, one of which is basically recreating the show from almost whole cloth for new viewers, particularly, and you know, I hate to focus them on the Disney Plus folks, but the Disney Plus viewers, which is when they're probably going to kick into gear. I mean, like, this is, there's a huge task in front of RTD and company with this.
Well, and you think about, you mentioned the Impossible Girl, and you think about also Turn Left, which was, you know, it was just one episode, but it was all about what kind of impact a single person can have on the world. And both, you know, The Impossible Girl and Turn Left kind of focused on what kind of good can they bring to the world. Wouldn't it be kind of interesting if you had that same kind of twist on it, where it's like, what kind of chaos is being wrought because this person is in the world? And it, I can see, because RTD has already proven he can do that with Turn Left, so what's to stop him from kind of twisting it and saying, like, you know, if you have the Doctor doing these things that's bringing in supernatural elements, what could somebody with this kind of you know, the vortex around them be? And, you know, what kind of stuff could they bring?
Ooh, especially if, what if she's the element that got introduced the biggest? So it's all, it still goes back to being something the Doctor caused to happen.
Right. And then because of the fact that he is as much of a caretaker and hard on the sleeve as this iteration appears to be, and is swearing to protect her, comes to the realization that she is, through no fault of her own, but her very presence there is the problem, and can't find the solution to say, how do I protect her and yet protect the rest of reality from what she is causing to happen? And you get stuck in that that challenge. So that's a new take, and definitely one that if you can tackle all of that in 8 episodes, more power to you, Russell.
I mean, in many ways they have, in a single episode, again with The Impossible Girl after Clara passes away, right? So that's what the hybrid is the idea that the two of them should not exist, and potentially the Doctor is willing to go through a billion years of solitude and, you know, potentially tear down the walls of the universe in order to protect his friend. So, yeah, it is a thing that potentially could still be. And I really like that idea, because hard choices, it'd be really interesting to see how this Doctor handles the hard choices, because some Doctors are really good and pragmatic about it, and some are emotional and sentimental about it, and I just think Shuti's going to be just wildly creative about it, so that's what I'm looking forward to seeing.
So what do we think the reception from the fandom would be if they were to lean more into the fantasy elements and not give it that button at the end to kind of try it, tie it into to science fiction? We've already seen the kind of backlash they got just for launching at a certain time. Do we think that the fandom is going to be able to accept more fantasy elements?
You are talking about one of the biggest Buffy fan girls in RTD. So it not only did it change how television was written, but I think it's the model in which Doctor Who, you know, all the way back in 2005 came about. So do I think the fans will have a fit? Yes, because it's a show about change, and it's the one thing fans hate about a show about change is when the show changes. Mm-hmm. But as much as we complain about our favorite program, we're always going to come back to it. I don't know any fan I don't know anyone, long-term fan, who's ever said, I'm just not going to watch the show anymore. Oh, I mean, sorry. Who has actually not watched the show after they've said that?
Yeah.
But the important thing is, how are they going to spin the show to bring in new folks? And honestly, scientific psychobabble is alienating. And, you know, references to the history is alienating. But you know what's hot right now?
Fantasy.
Super fantasy and supernatural stuff. Yeah. Like, I mean, you eventually, given a long enough period of time, you'll come up with an answer for it. So they could probably go 2 or 3 seasons before. I mean, it's like the Moffat approach, right? Like, they may not explain it in an episode, but if you watch it in its entirety, eventually it'll backtrack on itself. So even if folks enjoy it or don't enjoy it, it'll probably come back around and you know, kind of reset itself.
Right.
From the looks of the trailer, I feel like we also got some of that historical travel that's going to continue to tie in with what has been part of Doctor Who. I mean, I'm pretty excited to see some dinosaurs, which I was like, "They really? That's a thing we're going to see? Because that's cool. I love that." Looks like the TARDIS is going to sit there for a while. And I know we're probably not here just to digest the whole trailer, but I do think that some of that kind of stuff will help to keep it tied to what we are used to and some of the time sets and some of that kind of stuff. So I'm really hoping that pulls enough people back to straight instead of just angry all the time.
Yeah, it's still going to hit a lot of the beats that people would expect from, you know, from a, whether it's a Russell season or otherwise. You know, we're going to have our deep space travel. We're going to have a couple of period pieces with some guest stars. We're finally going to, you know, cross paths with the Beatles so that we can have that, because it only makes sense to. And something that we'll probably discuss in another episode is it looks like we're going to have at least a song and dance number, if not a full musical. So we'll figure that one out too. But again, not to dissect the trailer, but since we're talking about what can this fantasy and superstition trend do for the full, you know, if it's drawn across the season, so far, this is all we have of the season to see, to work from. So I guess the thing that I'm trying to your point, about what does this do for viewers? Does this it does hit the hot buttons right now? You know, zombies, they finally dissolved. We're not talking about zombies anymore. Hard sci-fi, we've had so many great properties over the last 10 years or so with things like The Expanse and what's still going on with the Trek properties and things. And with Star Wars blowing as wide as it does, there's plenty of straight up sci-fi out there for you. But if Who wants to do something new, if Russell, as the consummate showman, as the consummate provider of, you know what you want, I got a couple of those things for you. The first one's free and the next one will cost you. And he's constantly, you know, tweaking as he does. This seems like he's going where the audience, the larger audience, maybe that haven't quite come around to Doctor Who yet for one reason or another.
Well, think about it this way. Some of the hottest shows on television right now are science fiction, fantasy, and we're talking about the Star Wars universe. It does a very good balance. It walks this line between, you know, what is the force, if not fantasy elements in a science fiction program, where it's essentially a science fiction program. And you're on Disney Plus, right? Like, so if the audience is already built into your, you know, if your viewers are there, more of the same isn't a bad thing, especially it has the exotic nature of having a different accent. I think actually, now that I'm thinking about that, depending on how they handle it, might actually have a more tolerable audience reaction than what we're expecting. We're going to have a fit from the fan base that already exists, but new viewers, this might bring new viewers in. And because we're doing it series one, we are not as burdened by the back catalog of the last 60 years. So maybe this is a good thing. And again, like, before anyone who's listening to this freaks out, we don't know how far they're going to take it, but it's kind of nice just to kind of theorize about the way that our show that we love so much, that has been going on for so long, could lean into something different and still maintain the essence of what is Doctor Who. Well,
and I think that's what it ends up coming down to, is that there are a lot of things being done right now to grow the audience. The, you know, the move to Disney Plus, the rebranding with season one, giving people a brand new jumping on point so that they don't have to go back to, there are a lot of things being done to cater to new viewers. And I think that the fantasy elements, to your point, are one of them, because that is going to draw in new people. People are going to see it. They're going to get excited. They're going to want to watch it. And you are going to have the vocal minority who's going to, you know, rail and complain and say that they're killing the show. And eventually they will quietly come back to see what it is that they've been missing, because that's what they always end up doing. And I think that RTD knows that, and he's banking on that, saying we can get a whole big influx of new people, and the drop off that we may see from the old diehards will eventually end up coming back anyway.
Or maybe won't even leave because it's stuff, trends that they also still like, which is good. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we can have a little breather that is this. And so that brings me to a question that I was kind of wondering is, are there any other obvious sources of fantasy or superstition that we would hope to see? So I didn't realize I really wanted to see dinosaurs, and now I got that in the trailer. So anything else that we maybe didn't get in the preview, or something that would be an interesting topic or introduction to Doctor Who?
Oh, that is interesting. What's funny, too, because, you know, I am from the South, and there's a large portion of the population down here that do consider dinosaurs to be fantasy. I deal with that on a regular basis as a science educator. But it is also, and I don't know about you, it was the number one thing I would want to see if I were to jump into the TARDIS. So for me, more than anything else, it is wish fulfillment to spend more time with dinosaurs, because we haven't had them since they were on a spaceship. Yeah. So
I want earthwalking dinosaurs. I'm happy.
Yeah, sure.
I was thinking about what would happen if you were to take the your pantheon of monster of the week from an X-Files run, take the alien conspiracies out of it and leave yourself with more of the things that fell into the cryptid categories, mm-hmm. and be able to chase down things like that. Do we have a Sasquatch episode? Do we have, you know, the Jersey Devil? Do we have, you know, the things that would suddenly become a matter of, okay, well, if we're saying that everything that we thought was hokum and now has grounds for being reality, because reality as we know it is slightly warped at the moment for reasons yet unknown, then you can explore these things and put them within the Whovian scope so that we can enjoy it with the characters we know and love. And there's Kate Stewart and Unit with Mel, and now Donna running around trying to gather data on the fact that there are these spottings, that Loch Ness has finally been figured out, and they need to realize that that's actually one of the last remaining dinosaurs. And you get to play with all of that stuff, and it all fits, or at least it's acceptable within the scope of what we've established. We've laid the groundwork with our goblins and our lines of salt and stuff to turn this into, you know, the Winchester brothers and Scully and Mulder. I almost called Sculler and Moldy. Wow. What time of...
Skulder works.
Yeah, Skulder works. Just join it together.
It's just shipping. Yeah, it's just shipping. Blame shipping.
I mean, it would be great to see Doctor Who do an episode with Yeti, you know, something like that would be fun.
Right? Yeah. But that didn't just have the... Well, I don't know. You could...
The little glowing orbs.
We do have some Disney money we can throw at some animation or CGI for some of these things, too.
There's one little tiny thing sitting on the sides, too, which is, and I was thinking about this more and more, about what would happen if you started qualifying or reserving the right to do some of the more outlandish story ideas, and you're getting away with it because you're doing this incrementally, down to the point where we've got musical episodes. Or at least the premise where something like that, where somebody breaking into song and dance can happen for a moment.
That's not incremental. They're just doing it, by the way.
I see that as being something where there's an explanation as to why has the entire street suddenly broken into color coordinated, syncopated dance numbers. And that isn't the toy maker manipulating it, right?
Different episode.
Right. But my point is, if you were to do this and you're slowly breaking down these barriers of, well, that just doesn't happen in Doctor Who. Well, that just did. Well, that happened. So that means that this could happen and this could happen, and you can keep upping the ante. That actually opens the door for things that would never have been accepted by the viewers writ large before, and that's crossovers, legitimate crossovers, because your universes are getting fuzzy at the edges.
We discuss crossovers very frequently on our podcast, because it's like, oh, you want to come and talk about a show that's not Doctor Who? Okay. But at the end, we always want to talk about how would this crossover with it. I love the idea. And I think, you know, you're talking about a showrunner who, within 1 year of bringing Doctor Who back, immediately started to splinter it off into two other relatively, as far as the UK is concerned, successful spinoffs, mm-hmm. right? Like Sarah Jane ran for 5 seasons for a UK program. That's almost unheard of. Sure, Torchwood only lasted 2 in a movie, but again, it's a very weird audience trying to find that. There is a point I'm going to make, but I want to keep it on track with this one. But I do need to ask you if spinoffs are a possibility, look at what is viable in the market right now. What kind of show specifically are we talking about? Is this going to be something that is owned by the BBC? Is it something that is owned by potentially Disney? I mean, it seems like the BBC is the more likely candidate if you're actually looking at. Or are we just talking about a single character wandering in, being called by their first name but not their last name, so that it's clearly supposed to be X without falling into some kind of weird causal loop?
Point. Yeah,
it seems like the safer way to let the layers overlap slightly without turning into something that could potentially break either one of the properties later on down the road.
You're right. We have talked for 30 minutes, and we are talking about fantasy and Doctor Who, and we're talking about the return of RTD, and no one has brought up the fact that at one point in time they brought the Master back with a potion. So. You want to talk about fantasy existing within the program with zero explanation. Is that the kind of thing that we might be seeing in the future?
Well,
could this entire move of an increase of the supernatural just exist to retroactively justify that decision from 15 years ago or whatever it was?
The one thing I would like to see come of this is they've always enjoyed toying around with ghost stories. But like I said before, there's always that bit at the end where it's like, hey, you know, it's not really a ghost. But why can't we have a spooky kind of story like that? Something that's just, you know, has you slightly uncomfortable through the entire thing. And at the end, be like, all right, it wasn't ghosts. I don't know what it was, but it wasn't a ghost. Like, just you don't have to answer the question. Leave us wondering a little bit. It doesn't have to be specifically like, hey, ghosts exist in our universe now, but don't explain it for once.
I don't know if it was necessarily put in the ghost category, but as far as the left on inexplicable, wasn't that where Listen left off?
Yeah. Yeah. And that was a tremendous story. I absolutely loved that one.
Yeah.
Listen is sort of an abstract tale that's less about what they're experiencing externally and more about what the characters are experiencing internally and how their past sort of explains their future. I'm not saying that you're wrong, and you're right. Those kind of experimental stories can be very hit or miss, and in that case, very hit. But you're looking at like the villa, the haunting of Villa Diodati. Right. So the ghosts are explained as actually being cyber individuals. Mm-hmm. But there's also Graham keeps on seeing the mother and daughter, and that is never explained right. except yeah. as maybe, which is fine because it's not the central point of the story. The mystery mm-hmm. was not waved off as being, oh, it's supernatural. It is an added flavor. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about a culture that celebrates Christmas by telling ghost stories. If anyone is going to be telling ghost stories, it's probably the BBC, right? Like they've got a lot of, though it would be wonderful to hear some Japanese ghost stories as well, because they're so much better. But they've hinted at stuff in the past that could fall into that category as well.
I'm meaning sort of the mortal world, spirit world kind of a...
Well, the tricky thing about Doctor Who is... If you acknowledge the existence of a spirit world, you have to then acknowledge the existence of an afterlife. Right. And that's something that the BBC, especially with a family program, is very hesitant to do. Mm-hmm. The fact that Capaldi's doctor even mentioned Jesus by name is impressive.
Right.
But, you know, I hate to say it, but there's a lot of money to be had. And if Disney's putting some of that money in there, you're not likely to kind of tackle that level of confirmation one way right. or the other. You can call it a ghost, but then you have to kind of throw something. You have to, mm-hmm. pun intended, you have to throw some shade at it just in case.
Right. Yeah. So. Because I was concerned about the fact that when you get into the giggle and they're having the sit down at the table and when the toy maker really starts to lay into it and starts saying, you know, taking their god and turning him into Jack in the Box. And things of that sort. That was, we were getting closer and closer to the, and using the expression, oh my God, was happening more and more within the last couple of specials and with Church on Ruby Road, that I was realizing, I'm like, are they trying to open the door to some sort of inclusion of theology into the mix? Because they have stayed, they have steered very, very clear of that for its entirety. So that seems like a very dangerous.
With the exception of the classic era where they you know, discuss the Holy Trinity, which is, of course, the gods of Ragnarok, right? So, like, they're right there, the three of them front and center. That probably is not likely to reappear, but who
That's
knows?
That's kind of what I was thinking, is it's unlikely that we're going to get, like, you know, slammed in the face with theology, but maybe mythology, you know, maybe we encounter the aliens that showed up in Egypt and became the Egyptian gods, or, you know, somewhere in Norway, we come across a guy using a hammer to fight off bad guys or something. Yeah. You know, it's that kind of thing I can see happening, but straight up theology is, I think, is off the table.
I think if we're going to do this, we have to do this by allowing Neil Gaiman back to sit down and pen some scripts, because no one is going to do it better. No one's going to do that angle better.
Uh-huh. Sign me up.
He's already proven it.
I'll be there.
Well, I mean, the tricky thing is if you start looking at legend, lore, and mythology as Doctor Who's interference as creation, that has been done. And that is a thing that kind of exists throughout. I mean, you know, it's one of those things, like I said earlier, you know, every time they talk about a friendly wizard, it turns out to be the Doctor. It's kind of the bread and butter, especially when we start looking at the modern take on the character. But I would love to see more of it, because it's something I really appreciate. The idea that the Doctor's kind of been on our planet since the beginning, even though chronologically it's could be the Doctor's future that we're looking mm-hmm. at, which is our past, which is fun. We get a wibbly wobbly kind of show like that. But yeah, if you're looking at supernatural stuff, I love the idea of maybe revisiting vampires, because that is something that the show has done at least three times. And I would like to see another take on it that felt a little bit more actually vampire-y. And I know the Twilight Saga has kind of lost steam and vampires are going back. Maybe you look at the trends in horror movies, vampires are coming back as kind of scary and feral things.
Yeah,
again,
but making them more real in terms of they're just humans, like what we do in the shadows, is not a wrong way to do it. I feel like with Doctor Who, it's always mm-hmm. been the semi-alien, not humanoid versions of this. They can't walk in the daylight. They can't be part of us. They're clearly scaly or have these massive teeth things that don't make them integrate. So what if that were part of it and it became a thing that you had to figure that out in some way? That could be fun.
It occurs to me now that as I'm saying this, the Time Lords had a huge war against vampires in the classic series. Like, it was something that, like, almost destroyed both races. They're not going to they probably aren't going to reference that, but maybe that's not the thing. We've done werewolves. I kind of like the werewolf thing. We've done mummies. Is there something ghosts? Have we done, we've done gill people. Mm-hmm. We've done invisible, right? Invisible peoples. There's definitely Jekyll and Hyde. Yeah. I'm trying to think of, I know it's very limited and very Eurocentric to just go for the kind of universal monster appeal.
What has the Scooby Gang gone up against that we haven't yet seen?
Right. No. All right. I'll ask the question that nobody else is willing to do. When are we going to see the Doctor take on a beholder? I want to see this happen.
Only if the Doctor can team up with Jack Burton to do so.
I always thought the Drashigs were some sort of a really lame dragon of sorts.
I'd be okay with dragons, unicorns. Unicorns. Give me some serpents.
Unicorns would be really cool. Neat. I think unicorns would be a really interesting take.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Especially if they were like intelligent horses that we could either talk in one way or another. I have an outline for a novel. The one Doctor Who idea I ever had for a novel is based off of Doctor Who and Dungeons and Dragons, and it's called The Doctor and the Space Dungeon. That has. Should I describe
Do you want to though? I mean, it could be stolen property.
No, I'll tell you guys about it later. But you know, the fact that there is a master involved in this dungeon plays a major part in it. But
the master who's regenerated into a unicorn, because that'd be real cool.
It would be great if the master. I'm stuck as a horse.
There's Loki great. In the corner. Been there, done that.
Oh. Right. Yeah. This is a bad horse.
Yeah. How many legs you got?
Eight. In Norse mythology for Sleipnir.
So we don't. There's no real risk here. If this continues, if this picks up speed and starts adding layers of the fantastical and of the surreal and supernatural as we go on in the episodes immediately to follow here. I don't think we're at any sort of a risk of whether or not we resolve it at the close of the season. I don't think we're doing a disservice to this as a science fiction program, right?
Mm-hmm. No.
Again, I still refer to it as a science fantasy program, but I don't think so. And I think as long as there's some anchor where it feels like the show still could exist in reality, you still need to be able to watch the show and still feel like you as a audience member could potentially participate in those adventures if the Doctor were suddenly to show up on your doorstep. I think it's still fine. It's when you conflate high fantasy and high science together in a way that doesn't work, that's when you have a problem. So if the sonic screwdriver works one way for many, many, many seasons, and then all of a sudden it does something completely different, not something new, you know, we got to see the cool force fields, and I still felt like that worked out well. But like if the Doctor does something that so gets out of a situation in such a way that it just feels like it's just magic, that could be an issue. Because it feels...
If it starts working on wood, I'm out.
Or if it ever just comes across as lazy writing, right? Like, we couldn't figure out a way to get out of the story, therefore magic couldn't do it. I know the Doctor thinks their way out of situations, but if they spell their way out, that could spell kind of danger as a viewer.
Right.
So that's, you know, like, if I'm coming across correctly on that, it just is when it goes too far in a direction that doesn't make sense for the story.
Yeah,
as long as the story is good, I don't care.
Yeah, I don't mind it being outlandish, but if it's sort of like, you know, you've taken the Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court and just moved it forward 1,000 years, and so now I've got somebody who is, you know, that much further beyond us. So what they're doing seems outlandish and magical and couldn't, you know, must be some sort of, you know, a divine intervention or something of that sort. And somebody please call a higher authority, but they are just functioning outside of something that we don't understand yet. You know, we've relied on that for a long time of this show and others like it telling us that, you know, today's or yesterday's magic is today's science. And it's just a matter of you have to get your explanation down, and then it becomes part of your lexicon and part of your understanding, and your world has just expanded by that much. I've always rolled with that. I've never had an issue with it whatsoever. I think what you're referring to, Drew, if it suddenly takes such a steep climb to the next plateau, and there's nothing there to say how we got from what we understand to what the Doctor suddenly understands that has never been referenced before, or is trying to tell us that we need to just accept that has never been part of the conversation before, magic comes into the mix, and it's, oh, well, magic, we all know about magic. No, we don't. We haven't, you know, crossed that Rubicon yet. So yeah, it's something where this is going to have to be metered out carefully if that's where we're going.
Well, the danger is that example that we used earlier of the potion bringing the master back, because it's never explained where the potion comes from, how any of that works. And it just is taken as we needed to get the master back. which, by the way, we've never needed an excuse to get the master back. The master just shows back up. That's their superpower.
Even post burnt to crisp.
Yes, exactly so. But that instance in that episode is so diametrically opposed to everything that came before it and is in that episode that it feels incongruous to kind of the trajectory that the show is going in. That's what if that's what you're saying, like if we get gradual and it starts to get more and more supernatural and that actually turns out to be part of the plot and it's like, you know, try it. All your superstitions are working. All the old spells that your grandmother told you and you thought was a superstition are working. That's great because there's probably an answer for that. As long as there's a reason for it that eventually is explained within the text, I'm fine. It's when it goes, there's a potion. Why does it work? Because that's where you lose me. So, and JG, your point earlier, how are the fans going to react? If it goes in that way, poorly, I would imagine.
Well, we started this conversation with it's a superstition. It can be true. It can be two things at once. And we kind of wrapped it back up into the monsters are just creatures or friends we haven't met yet, right? So all that throughout, I am really hoping that we see some good fantasy superstition and really look forward to what we're going to get in our new series.
Well, there are obviously a lot of things that we can theorize about and postulate because literally, I mean, that's what we get the next month and a couple of weeks to do until May 10th or 11th, depending on where you are on the planet. We're not going to get into that argument because it's not our fight to have. So it's a whole nother conversation. But we want to have a conversation with you as the listeners about what you think this trend may mean, where it's headed, what the repercussions or fallout might be, or how it's going to be a raving success. So please feel free to do so by hitting us on all the various social media channels or heading over to Gallifrey Public Radio and chiming in there as well.
And thank you to Drew Meyer for joining us today. Where can people find you and the things that you love to talk about?
Ooh, well, if you like Doctor Who, I'm on a number of those. So Who and Company, the Doctor Who podcast, Reality Bomb, those are all basically monthly. And then if you like movies and role-playing games, I have a podcast called Never Say Die in which we watch a movie and talk about how we can represent the spirit of that movie in role-playing game form. Which is quite a lot of fun. So I do that with a buddy of mine as well. Doctor Who gets mentioned quite a bit. Also Hudson Hawk for some reason recently.
Go figure.
There you go with that.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on. This was really quite a treat. I miss you guys.
Same.
Yeah.
Well, this has been episode 516 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next time, this is Jay saying, really can't wait for the next session of Doctors and Daleks. Just wish we could get our schedules right.
And this is Kier saying, I am genuinely looking forward for the gradual transition from goblins to gremlins so that we can start feeding them after midnight and having a raucous time.
And this is Julie saying, look, I'm not saying it's ghosts, but I'm pretty sure it's ghosts.
We'll see you next time.
And we'll see.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. As a fan-run podcast, your thoughts and opinions are part of the conversation. Leave us a comment or review on your preferred podcast app, find us on social media to message us, or visit GallifreyPublicRadio.com for email and voicemail contacts. We'll see you out there in time and space.
Recording of Gallifrey Public Radio is copyrighted in 2024. GPR is a fan-owned, fan-produced podcast. We'll see you next time!